We are now talking with State Supreme Court Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson, and Election Day is coming up 1 week from tomorrow. Chief Justice Abrahamson, you're challenged by Jefferson County Circuit Court Judge Randy Koshnick, and I wonder if you might just simply state what, in your view, is most problematic about Judge Koshnick's record, or what might most concern the voters of the state about a Justice Randy Koshnick on the state Supreme Court.
Well, Judge Koshnick and I have a very different attitude and view. I decide cases on the basis of the facts and the law without a personal ideology or a viewpoint, and without influence by outside forces of any kind. I don't label myself except as Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Judge Koshnick uses labels that are meaningless, labels that the voters of this state rejected categorically in the November election. And if you're going to decide cases as you should on the basis of the facts and law, you don't need to label yourself anything other than a good judge.
Judge Koshnick, as I'm sure you're well aware, refers to himself as a judicial conservative, and I guess you've explained where you're coming from in terms of your view of that. But I wonder, could you contrast your judicial philosophy with Judge Koshnick's? You've explained it, but how does it differ in your view from the way Judge Koshnick might approach things on the Supreme Court?
Well, on the basis of his labels, he wants people to think he's going to approach these cases in a way that will fit what the listener hears with those labels. And yet a judge cannot impose a personal view and should not impose a personal view. And for example, according to several Court of Appeals decisions, Judge Koshnick has imposed his own personal view on the parties instead of following the law, and they've reversed him. Now, judges get reversed all the time. That's one thing. But it's rare that a court of appeals will say, well, that was your personal view, Judge. You imposed it. Maybe it was the right personal view, but it didn't match the law. So in one case, for example, the Court of Appeals said, while the trial court's Judge Koshnick's goal here of encouraging both parents to take their children shopping for clothes and prepare meals is desirable, the court, that's Judge Koshnick, may not, in an effort to achieve goals, exceed the authority granted by statute. So I am very much different than that. Interpret the law, apply it. No personal views. I've written 450 opinions. I've worked with 3,500 written decisions by the court. My record shows fair, impartial, neutral, nonpartisan. That's why I'm supported across the state by a diverse group of people, Republicans, Democrats, and independents alike, farm, labor, and business leaders, educators, retirees, Wisconsin families. And Judge Koshnick and I have gone toe-to-toe in front of any number of law enforcement agencies. He fought. He sent out selected compilation of cases to them. They studied the cases. Their lawyers looked at their cases. And you know who they supported? Me. So I've got the support of about 34 current and retired sheriffs. He has about 23. I've got the support of over 114 police chiefs. He's got less than 20, I think it was, at last count. I've got the support of over 260 judges across the state. They know my record. I think he has less than 10 judges who are supporting him. And I've got 41 district attorneys. That's more than half the state prosecutors in this state supporting me, and he's got less than 10, maybe 12.
That actually brings me to another point I wanted to talk with you about, and that is perhaps the perception that the public has, and I think it's a perception that's been fostered in part by some of the campaign rhetoric and campaign advertising in our last, certainly our last two state Supreme Court races, that the state Supreme Court has a lot to do with public safety. And I wonder if you might just address that. Is that a misperception? And maybe talk a little bit about the percentage of cases which you hear, which are in fact criminal cases dealing with public safety.
Now, public safety is of concern to all of your listeners, and it's a personal concern of mine, too. I have the same public safety as you all have. The Supreme Court, though, the majority of the cases are civil, and that's about 75% civil. That means about 25% are criminal. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court does not determine guilt or innocence. The Wisconsin Supreme Court does not determine sentencing or release. The Wisconsin Supreme Court looks at a case to decide whether the individual got a fair trial according to the statutes and constitution of this state and the United States. So we've got a very limited but very important function in criminal cases. And the thing one should always remember, too, is that taking a number of cases out of the totality of the cases upon which I have sat and written is a distortion of the court's record and a distortion of my record. And I want to tell you that Professor Daniel Blinka of the University of Marquette University Law School, he was just voted the best law professor in the state. And he's a former assistant district attorney in Milwaukee County and a former Milwaukee County Bar Association president. He looked at this compilation of cases that Judge Koshnick has set forth, and this is what he said about it. This compilation is a slapdash effort that is full of grossly inaccurate and misleading statements, lacking even the pretense of objectivity or balance. And then he said, contrary to the insinuations in the selected cases attack piece, Chief Justice Abrahamson has been in the forefront throughout her career in protecting women, children, seniors, and others who are vulnerable to sexual and other abuse in criminal cases as well as other areas of the law.
A couple of other questions, a couple of other things I wanted to ask you about, and one has to do with the bipartisan or nonpartisan nature, excuse me, of the state Supreme Court and the elections. Do you have a view one way or the other whether or not judicial candidates ought to be allowed to run under a party affiliation here in Wisconsin?
My good friend, Federal Judge Barbara Crabb, recently ruled that the Code of Judicial Conduct that said judges should not join political parties, judges should not personally solicit funds in a campaign, and judges should not personally endorse partisan political candidates. She ruled that those were unconstitutional, and that judges may do all of those things, be identified with a political party, support partisan political candidates, and personally solicit campaign funds. That decision has been appealed by Attorney General Van Hollen, but it's still in effect. The issue for me is not what I can do, but what I should do, and I will not do any of those items. I will not be a member of a partisan political party. I will not personally solicit funds, and I will not personally endorse partisan political candidates. The Wisconsin judiciary should be nonpartisan. We have to keep partisan political parties out of the Wisconsin judiciary, in my opinion.
And lastly, on the issue of public financing, which is still out there, still something that is being discussed at the Capitol, public financing for state Supreme Court races, given that you've been considerably more successful than Judge Koshnick in fundraising, your campaign has, do you think public financing ought to be available for leveling the playing field, if you will, for making it easier for candidates to I guess, run against more well-financed incumbents, as is so often the case, not just in judicial races, but let's limit ourselves to that discussion.
I have supported public financing for Supreme Court justices' races for the last 30-plus years. The Wisconsin Supreme Court, all seven of the justices, including me, sent a letter to the governor and to the legislative leaders of both houses and both parties seeking a realistic, effective public financing law. That was in, I think, December of 2007. It has not yet been adopted. I favor it. And one reason I favor it is not only to level the playing field if needed for incumbents, but in the last two recent elections, what we had was incumbents and challenges were drowned out significantly by ads of outside interests who doubled and tripled and maybe quadrupled the amount that the two candidates gave. So I favor public financing.
First of all, in terms of your critique, if you will, of Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson and her conduct on the Supreme Court, what, in your view, is most problematic about that, and what ought to be most worrisome to the voters of Wisconsin?
Well, what's most problematic about her service on the bench is her judicial philosophy. She is a liberal judicial activist who legislates from the bench. She's in the same school of thought as Ruth Bader Ginsburg and John Paul Stevens on the U.S. Supreme Court. You see the same ideological divide on state Supreme Courts all across the country. Her judicial activism has led her to overturn or vote to overturn many statutes passed by the legislature. And activist judges pose a threat to our system of government because they place too much power in the judicial branch and they usurp power from the people's elected representatives in the legislature.
And can you cite examples of cases where Judge Abrahamson, in your view, did exactly that?
Sure. The most notorious case is the sexual predator case. There's actually two of them. It involves the same statute, Chapter 980. The sexual predator statute in Wisconsin allows the state to petition a court to have a convicted sex offender committed for inpatient treatment if the offender is about to be released from prison and if the person still poses a danger of committing additional sex crimes. Now, this law was passed in the early 90s. It was challenged in 1995 in the Wisconsin Supreme Court on constitutional grounds. Six out of the seven justices at the time read the law, read the Constitution, and determined that the law was constitutional. Justice Abrahamson was the sole dissenter, and she voted to strike down the sex predator law because, in her opinion, it was unconstitutional. But there is, in fact, nothing unconstitutional about that law. A very similar law has been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. In addition, state Supreme Courts around the country have upheld similar laws. So that's an example of an activist judge, Justice Abrahamson, trying to overturn the will of the legislature improperly.
Contrast her judicial philosophy, if you will, for us with your own.
Well, when I'm on the Supreme Court and I'm asked to declare a statute unconstitutional, the first thing I look at, of course, is the statute. And then I will look at the Constitution. Now, as a judicial conservative, I am a strict constructionist. In other words, if the Constitution is silent, then the court should also be silent. It's not proper for the court to read things into the Constitution that simply are not there. I am a strict constructionist. I apply the text of the Constitution the way that it's written. So in the 980 case, for example, the sex predator case, I agree with the six justices in the majority in that 1995 case who read the Constitution and determined that the statute in no way violated the Constitution. In fact, the statute served a very legitimate public interest function of keeping dangerous sex offenders off the streets.
Given the differing philosophies that you and Judge Abraham, or Chief Justice Abrahamson, have, and of course the differing philosophies of all the candidates in our last several state Supreme Court races, are the voters or the people of Wisconsin deluding ourselves that these are nonpartisan positions, and should candidates for the state Supreme Court be allowed to run with party affiliations?
Well, no, I don't think that the voters are deluding themselves to think that it's nonpartisan. And just so we have this straight, I'm not running as a political conservative. And there's a difference I'd like to explain between political conservatism and judicial conservatism. You know, political conservatism would, you know, basically be Republican Party politics, and they take certain positions on laws that they propose to be passed. So that's political conservatism. A judicial conservative, a true judicial conservative like myself, does not take any political views into the courtroom with him. I apply the law the way that it's written. So if, for example, our current Democrat legislature passed a law that was generally liberal policy-wise and the governor signed it, which could happen because we have a Democrat governor, it would be my obligation as a true judicial conservative to apply that law the way that it's written. Now, in fact, personally, I am more conservative politically and culturally, but I would not let those personal viewpoints interfere with my obligation as a judge to respect the will of the people as reflected in our legislative actions and uphold the law, whether it's a politically liberal or politically conservative law.
And is there a danger, or can you cite some examples, where the Wisconsin State Supreme Court has, in fact, usurped the role of the legislature and created policy as opposed to interpreting law?
Sure. Well, you know, briefly in the sexual offender case, Abramson, if she would have had her way, would have done just that. Now, thank goodness the majority was wiser and decided not to interfere with the legislature's decision. One recent case, however, from 2005, did not turn out so well for the people of this state. The state Supreme Court in the Ferdon decision, F-E-R-D-O-N, voted 4-3. A four-justice activist majority ruled that the medical malpractice caps passed by the legislature were not constitutional. So, you know, here's where you can really see very clearly the effect that activism has on the state of our government and the state of our state. We had a debate in our legislature, Republicans, Democrats, arguing, compromising, debating about the wisdom of a cap in a medical malpractice case. We had them consulting with doctors and insurance companies and injured patients, and all viewpoints were considered, and after much debate and compromise, the CAPS law was passed by the legislature on a majority vote and signed by the governor. The basic policy reason behind the cap was to keep medical malpractice premiums for doctors under control in the state. Several states are losing doctors. They're leaving in hordes because medical malpractice premiums are so high, primarily because of these multi-million-dollar jury awards for pain and suffering. So regardless of what you think about the wisdom of a cap, the legislature passed it. They made a policy decision that was geared toward keeping health care costs down in Wisconsin and keeping good doctors in Wisconsin and, in fact, making sure that health care was available for the citizens of Wisconsin. When it got to the state Supreme Court, the four-justice majority, including Justice Abrahamson, declared the cap unconstitutional. Now, I read the state constitution. It doesn't talk about medical malpractice caps anywhere in there. The state Supreme Court made law beyond what the Constitution says. They used what I call legal window dressing to declare the statute unconstitutional. But basically, the decision was a victory for civil trial lawyers who want to be able to sue and obtain these large judgments against doctors and their insurance companies. And so it happened to be a politically activist or politically liberal decision as well, because it went against the trial lawyers, a traditional Democrat or liberal group, and it went against doctors, patients, and citizens in Wisconsin.
I want to ask you a little bit about public financing of campaigns. I know that you've faced a challenge, frankly, in raising the type of money that's available to the Abrahamson campaign to run campaign advertising. Do you have a view, either pro or con, on whether state Supreme Court races ought to be publicly financed?
Well, I think public financing is a good option to have so that somebody is able to run if they're a viable candidate without needing to be independently wealthy. Justice Abrahamson does have a fundraising advantage over me because she, first of all, is an incumbent, and second of all, the plaintiff's trial lawyers know that she routinely votes in their favor. So for example, in this election cycle, there are civil cases pending, and the lawyers on those pending cases have given Justice Abrahamson's campaign $30,000 I don't think that's right. I don't think it's right for a judge who's running for office to take money from lawyers who have cases pending in that judge's courtroom. So, yes, she's been able to raise more money. She's also consistently decided in favor of major labor unions, WEAC and AFSCME, to name a few, and they are supporting her as well through their membership and their contributions. So she's been able to raise more. I'm still confident I can raise enough to run a viable campaign. We're well over $100,000 at this point. We expect to be at or above $200,000 by election day, so we'll have enough to get our word out.
What, I guess, do you feel is the single most important perception that the public ought to have about the Supreme Court, or what's the biggest misconception the public has about the role of the state Supreme Court?
Well, the most important perception for the public to have is the effect of the Supreme Court on public safety. Now, Justice Abrahamson repeats that most cases decided by the Supreme Court are not criminal. That's true if you discount the numbers of cases. But the criminal cases have the greatest effect on society because they're binding precedent. You know, that decision in a criminal case by the Supreme Court does not just affect that defendant and that victim. That is precedent in the state of Wisconsin from that point forward. And if you look at Justice Abrahamson's decisions on the state Supreme Court compared to all other justices who have served with her during her current term, basically back to since 2000, she consistently sides with criminal defendants. 60% of the time, she sides with criminal defendants and against victims and against law enforcement. One of the justices was above 50% with her. The remainder were all less than 50%. So she's way out of the mainstream. Her decisions compromise public safety, like the example I gave of the sex predator case. And there are many other examples I could give you where her decisions compromise public safety because she has a predisposition to rule in favor of criminal defendants. People need to know that. I mean, these laws are there to protect our families and our kids, and we shouldn't be tying the hands of law enforcement by making it more difficult for them to do their jobs than it needs to be.
Judge Radney Koshinick, candidate for Wisconsin State Supreme Court, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.